Our next poet is Joshua Crea. That's not Crea, in case you're curious. It's Crea, who is also the poetry editor of UMSLS, or University of Missouri St. Louis, Lit Mag, and was featured on the recent spoken word collection of young local poets, Distilled Muse. From time to time, he works here, so if you like his work, I'm sure he'd be happy to have you have recite it for you at the tables when he's bussing it. Please welcome Josh Crea.
Thank you very much. I have to say thanks to River Styx and Carrie Robb for getting me up here and doing this whole thing. And also thanks to Karen Duffy and Paul and Dan, who are the two bartenders tonight. I work here, so this is their night off, and they're here. So let's give them a round of applause for being here and doing that. I'm just going to read a few poems. The first is from a series I've been working on entitled The Myths of Dogs and Poets. You might see a correlation, you might not, but I do because I'm afraid of both, very afraid of both. The first one is entitled Why the Dog Howls at the Moon. Why the dog howls at the moon? Because there is nothing else for it to do, not whine, thump, or whisker its way into a sort of mythology as big as the moon's, one for every night. Because it is only one constellation made up of two yellow eyes and the rows of varnished teeth that disappear down its throat, wanting to swallow a belly larger than its own. Two, what the poet means by the muse. The guitar is a coffin for old songs. It just wants to be held and played upon. The poet takes the guitar into his hands as he would a woman, and stirs up the dusty love songs in its body, all the while tuning a new poem that will eventually leave it as empty and as cold as the grave he found it in. Three, why the dog barks at strangers. Because, a man at the bus stop told me, between bits of broken Spanish, they are needing something themselves. El perro, he said, is worse than the beggar, because its bark is asking for spare change. And when someone reaches out to pet it, it bites his hand, hoping to run away with both money and blood in its mouth. The next poem is made up of, it's a poem of postcards. It has to do with people writing you postcards who you may or may not know. Postcards, which are generally caricatures of the place they're writing from. Generally, this is kind of coming out of the Caribbean, you know, those nice, very pastel, wonderful places. And thus, the poem itself is kind of a caricature. The voice is a caricature. And so it's complete fiction. And it's broken up. Each section is broken up into dates as an individual postcard. Some bleed into the next, but you'll see how it goes. It's entitled Postcards from the Month of June. June 2nd. I've seen the wind lift its head, and I can tell you, its hair laughed. June 3rd. Even the heat gets pushed around here, humidity bruised against the sides of buildings. June 7th. I am of little resistance to the hands that move in and out of my clothing. Perusing my skin as waves do sand, wearing it down to bone, particle, then nothing. June 8th. Yesterday, when I wanted to pay for the crinkled aluminum monkey that flipped all by itself on a dusty rug laid out along the market's tattered street, I found that my wallet was missing. June 13th. There were two things I've been told about this place, but I cannot remember them. I can't even remember its name. June 19th. Someone's hair is forever falling in my face, and somewhere, Porch chimes are clanging for their lives, as if silence itself was full of some awful screaming. June 21st. You wouldn't believe the nights here. They shove the sun right into the sea and stare back at you until you cover your eyes and stumble off to the nearest bright-lit bar. June 22nd. Inside, you rock back and forth on your heels with every drink you take, the pastel cocktail umbrellas rattling with your breath, making you dizzy. June 25th. I thought of you today, and the double-fisted advice of the wind as it rises like a sheet off a bed from the sea, then resettles. June 26th. The slightly ruffled linen of hello, and the still, ironed water of goodbye. This is the last one. It's a poem about a poet, an instructor, somebody who loves a woman and the moon, but he loves the moon more than he loves the woman. It's entitled Mona Luna. What else is there in the indifferent insomnia of love than the moon, pilfered from the sky and sent spinning in a chipped window frame, a cloudy prism, reminding one of a time when there was an actual chance at understanding between the head and tail of things, that prolonged pause, or was it a sigh? When a coin rose in fortune, like hats tossed into the air, and then fell off into a kind of fate that bears down on the bare bones of it all, like the moon and love in retrograde. I have tried to remember the choosing moment, so much so that now I cannot be with her in the same bed for long. After all, this is about me, as if it was ever about anything else but me and perhaps the moon. Tonight, when my feet touched the kitchen's silver linoleum floor, I thought I knew a thing or two about the moon. Pale beginnings, pale endings, enough to answer your question, why do you always write about the moon? It was no good, though. It all became confused with the heads on coins and the way the serpent of my love swallows its own tail, so that now I can only sit here and try to remember the time when I had a choice, let alone made a decision, one that went by as smooth as any forgetfulness I've ever known. The moon, nothing more than a thin wafer of cloud, gently disturbing the face of the sky. Thank you.